Welcome to Wormhole Waffles, a Stargate podcast. Welcome to Wormhole Waffles. I just forgot what to say next. Yay! My name. No, that's not how I start. It's been about 2 weeks and I forgot how to start this podcast. Okay.
It might as well have been a year.
Yeah. All right. Welcome to Wormhole Waffles. I'm your host, Chelsea, and with me is my co-host, Arzu.
Hello.
Sorry,
I was feeling while I heard my voice break on that. Hello.
So last week we did an overview and analysis of Stargate SG-1 seasons 4 and 5. Today we're going to be starting with season 6, episodes 1 and 2, Redemption Part 1 and 2. Part 1 premiered on June 7th and Part 2 premiered on June 14th, 2002. Both were written by Robert C. Cooper and directed by Martin Wood. And so I was noting on the dates on this that season 6 starts less than a month after season 5 ended, and normally there's a longer break between seasons. So I think this supports your theory that you said a few weeks ago that the second half of season 5 was delayed because of 9/11.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised, like both in its production and in the "is this in poor taste?"
Right.
"We're a nation in mourning" type.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
You're so smart.
That's interesting, though, that it's... I didn't remember the date. It's interesting that it's such a short turnaround.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like normally a new season starts in July, too. So it's interesting this one's starting in June. But anyway. And also, this is the
first... I wonder if this had been the plan initially.
I don't know.
Just was wondering if, like, they had scheduled ahead of time to, like, play it earlier... anyway, and then the delay just gave it a very
short gap. Maybe. Could be.
But I don't know.
And this is the first season to premiere on Sci-Fi rather than Showtime.
Does that explain the new opening?
No. I think there's a specific reason for the new opening, but you said before recording that you didn't actually catch the last 2 to 3 minutes of the second episode, and the reason for that opening is in that 2 to 3 minutes, so we'll get there.
Lovely. So let me just explain to everybody that it's not that I'm bad at this, although I don't know if you're listening this far, maybe you disagree. Don't tell me if you do. It's not that I'm bad at this. It's that I've said before, I get the DVDs from the library, and that's how I've been watching. And while I'm all for supporting your public library, what I'm not for is borrowing DVDs and scratching them. So there's something wrong with disc one, and it won't play the last couple minutes of the episodes. So it was okay for part one because I figured it was going to be in the previously on bit. So I was right. And then I didn't see the end of part two after Teal'c comes in and tells Jack that his son's going to go off with Braytag. It stopped there. So I don't actually know what happened after that.
Yeah. Yeah. You missed some important things.
I missed a lot. So
yeah. That's okay. I'll tell you what it is. So from what you were able to see, can you please summarize these two episodes?
Well, they're suffering from a lack of Daniel. And they've got some exciting new tech that they are looking into while they're also sort of auditioning a new member of the team. Like, they're just trying to find, like, somebody else to be their resident nerd.
Yeah.
Teal'c goes off for some free Jaffa stuff while the rest of them test out tech with the Russians. And something goes wrong!
Of course.
Of course. But, like, it is pretty cool. They've got ships that can... I keep wanting to call it hyperspace because of Star Wars. And I'm so afraid that's the wrong word.
No, I think that is what they
say. It is called hyperspace.
Yeah.
They have ships that can travel through hyperspace.
Well, kind of. They're trying.
That's what they think they've got.
Yeah. They're attempting to. Okay, let's do our quote reveal. 2 weeks ago, I gave you the quote, "This could be the most important breakthrough for Earth since the discovery of the Stargate." And your guess was that Hammond is talking, and it's talking about something that they have discovered this week, likely the problem of the week, and your backup choice for speaker is Sam. It was Sam who delivered the line. But I don't know. Maybe I can give you like a half a point.
It's kind of the, it's not the cause of the problem. Kind of cause of the problem. Kind, it's not, related to the problem.
It's not, yeah, it's not the problem of the week directly.
No, I don't think I need a point for the, because everything is the problem of the week, isn't it? I don't think I need a point for the context. Maybe like a half point for the speaker.
Yeah, I'll give you a half point for the speaker. Oh, five sprinkles.
I was really disappointed with how mundane the quote was, all things considered.
Oh, my bad. Sorry.
No, no, not like the actual line, just like in context.
Okay. Okay.
Because I thought it was going to be a bigger deal, but like in context, yeah. I was like, this is kind of, but then I should have known because they had a huge status quo shift at the end of the last season.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like we're going to jump right into, and now we're exploring again and we're kind of where we left off, like obviously not, it's gonna take a few weeks to get there again, so
yeah
what I'm trying to say is that's on me.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess I kind of agree with you because it is really cool, but it's not like revolutionary. Yeah, we'll get
it. I guess it is for them, but we'll get there.
Yeah so we open up the first episode, Redemption Part 1, with SG-1 minus Daniel plus some random guy running towards the Stargate from a mission, and Jack is hurt. And so we kind of like, once they get back, we establish that they have been trying out new people to fill in for Daniel. And they've tried out 9 people so far, and Jack hates all of them. But a fun trivia bit that actually my mom clued me into was that Jack is hurt in this episode specifically because he's actually hurt. He slipped and like fell on his knee when he was playing with his daughter or something, and so he's actually limping throughout this episode. And oh, so you have like so many of his scenes where he's like sitting on something to help, you know, with that.
That makes sense. That's a long day on set. So
Yeah. Oh, Kira is chiming in. She thinks it's a fun factoid too.
It is fun, Kira. Echo would chime in, but he's downstairs watching TV.
Good for him. So yeah, we're kind of reintroduced to Jonas because we saw him in the second to last episode of season 5. That's when we met him for the first time, and you know, that's when Daniel died and Jonas brought the Nequadria to Earth, and I think we briefly saw him in the closer, but I don't think we saw him for very long. And so now we're like actually starting to like learn more about his like personality and what he likes doing. So he likes orchestral music, weather reports, and learning ancient Babylonian. And I love him. I think he's so fun and just like such a sweet guy. And he has such real commentary in terms of like, how do y'all know what color to wear?
After I saw this scene, I put in my notes, oh, okay, Chelsea, I see why you like this one.
Why?
I don't know. He's just got such a like, an energy, like such a puppy dog energy. Like I said later, like they got a puppy. He's got such a puppy dog energy about him.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And he's just, I mean, so far, nothing discernibly wrong with him.
Uh-huh.
So, I don't know. It's just, I mean, we can get into this at the end, but even for as much as I drag Daniel, I am feeling his absence.
Yes.
Very much. It's like we're missing a step. And Jonas doesn't feel that yet.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's new, because he's just in general got a very different energy, but
yeah.
But he's nice. He's like nice. He's fun. I'm excited to see where he goes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you don't want to bring in somebody who's like a carbon copy of Daniel, because then it
that would actually be worse.
Yeah.
You would be very aware.
Yeah. But yeah, I really like Jonas. And so, yeah, we'll see how much you like him as the season goes on.
That sounds like a threat. Like, is something going to go wrong?
But anyway, like, I love him talking about, like, what colors to wear. Because, like, right after he talks about, like, how do I know what color to wear, the next scene, they're all wearing green, but he has a camo jacket on. And none of the rest of them do.
He probably called somebody, probably O'Neill. And O'Neill's like, we're all wearing camo. And he got a camo jacket, and nobody else wore camo.
Probably. That is something Jack would do.
It's that, or that was the only green adjacent jacket he could find. And he's like, close enough.
He hasn't gotten his full like wardrobe compliment yet.
Plus, it was 2002. Camo was in style.
Yeah. Well, he just likes it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they all go to Area 51. And this is when we discover the next thing that's the biggest breakthrough since the Stargate, which is the X-302. So this is kind of a callback to the Tangent episode in season 4, I think? I think it was season 4. When they had the X-301, which was really just a glider, a gold death glider that they had put a human computer into, like a human-made computer into, whereas the X-302... uses Gwold technology, but it's physically all like hand built. So there's no chance of there being a recall device from Apophis this time.
You know, it's the little things.
Yeah. And so they are trying to outfit this for hyperspace because they have a compact hyperspace generator that's powered by Nequadria. That's only been possible thanks to Jonas. And they're not sure if it's going to work. I mean, essentially, like, Sam and the other scientists are confident it's going to work. And Jonas is like, you know, I really don't think you should be so confident about that. And Sam is like, well, I'm the scientist kind of thing. And it's like, well.
But also.
Yeah. So the X-302 is going to continue to be very important for the rest of the series. So, yay.
The rest of the series.
Yeah.
Well, if only I'd been able to see these episodes through to the end.
Well, I mean, because it's the Earth version of a glider. So anytime there needs to be, like, localized air defense.
It's going to be the X-302.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Another status quo change.
Well, it's like we're expanding.
Yeah.
You know, expanding our capabilities.
Preparing for Atlantis in a couple years.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Yeah, so we learn about that, and then they go back to the SGC, and Colonel Chekhov is there. He's the Russian envoy, and Jack is so rude to him. I mean, insubordinate, really, except that I'm not sure if you can technically be insubordinate for someone from another country since they're not, like, remotely in your chain of command. But it's just so incredibly rude. And, like, I understand that Jack doesn't want to rush on his team. But there's no reason to be that unprofessional.
I made a note that the older Jack gets, the more petulant he gets.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like he displays, especially this week, a level of childishness that I don't think he would have had in like season 2.
Yeah. It's like he's gotten more bold in his position in terms of like he knows he's never going to be fired for anything.
Yeah. But like you're right. Like it's not insubordination because that's not his commanding officer. But if your commanding officer is like ordering you to get along with this guy, then maybe it is actually a little bit.
Yeah. It depends on what your commanding officer is doing to like instruct you in regards to this other person.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get frustrated with him when he's like that. Cause I'm like, I like when he is sassy and he like makes jokes, but this is just being an a-hole. Like,
yeah, it was just, there's a lot he says this.
Like, oh, he's racist later on. Oh my god, we'll get the alien thing.
Can we talk about that for a second?
Oh yeah, sure.
So Teal'c like proposes that Jonas just join their team, right?
Yeah.
So Teal'c suggests, you know, why not Jonas? And Jack starts to say, because he's an alien. Mm-hmm. He's got the sentence about halfway out of his mouth. The camera pans to Teal'c, who's just looking at him like, seriously? And you think this is the part where Jack's going to rein it in, but then he like finishes the thought. He's like, no, he's an alien.
Yeah.
Like, this is the problem. And like, he fully sees that thought through, which is weird. And then like, to Teal'c of all people. Mm-hmm. And then proceeds to double, triple, and quadruple down on the reasons why this is a bad idea.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but every single thing you just said about, like, you don't know who's going to have your back and you don't want to have to worry about it and loyalties and whatever, you could have applied to Teal'c and you didn't.
Yep. Yep.
And, like, even they were a little initially mistrustful of Teal'c when he first came on board because of how close he was to the Apophis situation. Mm-hmm. We're never this outright hostile, and you arguably had more reason to be.
Exactly, because Teal'c was working for the enemy. Jonas is just some guy from some planet
who
happened to be involved in Daniel's death. I mean, I think the real reason that Jack doesn't like him is because he associated with Daniel's death, but it's like, he was not an enemy combatant that switched sides, you know?
Like, yeah, when you're fighting Apophis at first, or when they're fighting Apophis at first, like, literally, they were fighting Apophis with the worms in the stomach, and they took Daniel's wife. And Teal'c shows up, like, hi, I used to work for Apophis, and look, I have a stomach worm. And they're like, okay, we're gonna take this with a grain of salt, but welcome to the team. I'm like, that was a lot of trust you put in Teal'c, and ultimately that wound up being the right call.
Yeah.
But why are you being so hostile towards Jonas? He didn't do anything.
Yeah, exactly.
If anything, he tried to, like, help you when Daniel was dying. He, cooperated. He was...
Yeah.
Ultimately, Daniel's the one who raw-dogged a nuclear device. So, like...
Yeah, I mean, Jonas told the truth about what really happened to his supervisors. He stole Nequadria. He's trying to do his best to help out while he's here on Earth. He hasn't done anything wrong. It's just Jack being like a curmudgeon and having a bad association. But it's like, this is xenophobic, my dude. Like,
and I don't mean to make it about September 11th again, but is this one of those things that's indicative of the time period of, like, Teal'c being, quote unquote, one of the good ones? And, like, Jonas is a new one. Jonas is somebody who's peripherally connected to us losing somebody we love. And as such, we are just generally mistrustful.
Yeah.
Whether that's intentionally, like, intentional messaging here or unintentional messaging. And it's just a product of its time.
Yeah.
Because as bad as the Concubines episode was, nothing was ever, like, I don't remember this much xenophobia being displayed and then not questioned. Like, Teal'c questions it, but I don't think we're given reason to think that Jack is, like, deeply out of pocket for this. Just kind of like, oh, maybe think about what you're saying. But, like, the way he makes his argument to Teal'c, I feel like we're supposed to think maybe he's making a point.
Mm-mm. Yeah,
I'm not sure, but, like, I just thought it was odd the way it was presented.
Yeah, because I feel like in the Emancipation episode, it seemed like they were trying to do the right thing, even if it didn't land the way that they thought it was going to land.
Right.
They weren't trying to be othering, whereas Jack here, given the fact that he has that pause, he realizes what he's saying. He realizes what he's saying is xenophobic, and he says it anyway.
And then he explains why.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it's an odd choice for a character.
It's an odd
choice for our hero.
Well, I was thinking, like, maybe the writers at the time didn't see it as problematic because Jonas is white. So it's not like he's saying that about a person of color, which would make it even worse.
I mean, thank God for small mercies.
But that still doesn't make it okay.
No, it doesn't. It's just, it's a very weird thing to have him double down on.
Yeah.
And like, maybe they're presenting it as like, you know, almost in an audience avatar way. Like, we, you all as the audience know that what we're doing right now is considering the fourth member of the team. We're bringing in somebody else mm-hmm. who's never going to be Daniel, but we do need that fourth person in the dynamic. And it's almost like addressing it and addressing the fact that the dynamic is going to be different is going to make that change easier.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think they considered that calling it out like that in a xenophobic way was going to be a problem. Even though Jonas is white, it's just in still being like, he's not from here, I can't trust him.
Yeah. And well, it's the same thing with the Russians too. It's the exact same attitude.
Yeah.
The Russians, and there's multiple beats in these two episodes where Jack very explicitly says that he doesn't like the Russians, and like, it's the same thing. So Jack needs to grow up.
Jack really, like, I love him. He's very sexy, but he does need to grow the hell up.
Yeah. And actually, I mean, Jack is definitely the worst one, but Sam is also kind of an a-hole to Jonas too. Not as explicitly, but like, he thanks her for bringing him along to Area 51. And she's like, oh, well, Hammond ordered me to. And then later on, he asks her if he can join SG-1. And she's just like, I don't see that happening. And I'm like, okay, but why is this happening?
Is she saying that because of how hostile Jack is? Like, she
maybe just doesn't
think it's going to happen because
she knows how she knows how he is.
Because she doesn't seem to have a problem with him otherwise.
No.
Like, even arguably, not to defend it, but arguably him being like, oh, thanks for letting me tag along, and her being like, well, Hammond said to do it, is like her way of not getting his hopes up.
I almost think that maybe she kind of also doesn't want a new team member because she's also still mourning Daniel. She just has better manners.
Yeah.
And she's not going to explicitly say that she doesn't want him there or that he doesn't belong there. She's just not going to argue if Jack says those things.
Yeah.
So then Jonas turns to Teal'c, and Teal'c is the only one who's really nice to him. Well, I mean, Hammond is nice to him, but Teal'c is the only SG-1 member who's nice to Jonas, and they have a little boxing session together, which, you know, of course, like, Teal'c wipes the floor with Jonas, but...
Oh, of course.
But, I mean, they have, like, a nice bonding moment, and, you know, Teal'c talks about how it takes Jack a while to open up to people, blah, 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 and that Jonas should just, like, keep trying. So, I mean, Teal'c is, like, really doing the most. But, yeah, just so frustrated with them. Minus Teal'c. Teal'c was fine.
Teal'c's fine.
And Teal'c had this, like, he got this huge tray full of food. And then he got called off world because apparently his wife is sick. So there, I feel like there's a lot to unpack here.
So much to unpack, we're just going to throw away the suitcase.
So much. Okay, so apparently Dreok has been sick for a while and is so sick that she's about to die. In fact, I think she does die before he actually gets
she
there.
She does. He doesn't actually make it. They didn't want to cast the actress, so she's dead by the time he gets there.
Yeah. So one, Teal'c has not visited his family long enough for him to not know that she was sick in the first place. And if she was that sick, I would think it would be a few weeks at least. So, you know, there's that. That's going to be important later, talking about his son. But I'm so frustrated with Dreok's storyline because, I mean, I don't think she's done justice. I mean, just like Sheree, it's like another wife that is just not treated well in the storyline. I understand it's complicated because she doesn't live on Earth and it's just like another person that you have to deal with, but like, come on. And then there's the whole issue of biology that I don't understand, because we've talked about this before. I thought that Jaffa women didn't have symbiote pouches because I didn't think you could physically have both a symbiote pouch and be pregnant. But apparently you can, because apparently she has a symbiote pouch. And her symbiote is dying, and that's why she's dying. And I'm like, but if you have a symbiote pouch, is there room for the baby? Like, and you're, like, obviously it's not exactly... like, obviously the uterus is different than the symbiote pouch, but I don't understand how there's enough space in a person's body for both things at the same time.
Listen, a person capable of childbirth, all their organs are where they need to be on the inside. Everything's got a spot. Then you get pregnant and baby moves it and mm-hmm. it all reaccommodates.
Yeah.
The symbiote pouch does the same. It just shifts.
I guess. I just...
And that and the symbiote becomes the prenatal vitamin while you're pregnant.
So do you think the symbiote pouch shifts up?
Yeah, I think so.
That would be so weird. That would look so weird.
What I think, and then the little X slit that like uh-huh. opens so the worm can come out and be like, bah! Or whatever. That's not what happens at all. I think that kind of like holds itself closed. So it doesn't just pop open when your belly.
Well, I mean, it doesn't normally come out anyway.
It doesn't normally come out, but like how, like people don't normally balloon either.
Oh, it's not like the skin expanding. Oh.
Yeah, the actual.
Yeah, see, that's why I think that it doesn't make sense. Because in the past, the only women Jaffa that we've seen symbiote pouches are the priestesses who, like, obviously aren't having kids, you know.
Well, wait, no. Didn't Shuri have one?
No, she was a Gua'uld. She had one in her head. Right. Not right. A symbiote pouch.
I could have sworn she had a pouch, too.
No.
Well, listen, I barely saw her because Daniel barely saw her. So, like, in my defense.
And I really haven't... I feel like in later seasons when we meet Jaffa women, the warriors are also not able to have children. So I'm trying to like remember, I need to like look into this, but if this is the only instance where we ever talk about a Jaffa woman both having a symbiote pouch and having been pregnant at some point, then I wonder if it's just like a blip in the canon that we shouldn't really think about too much.
Maybe she got her symbiote after she had the baby.
Yeah, but you normally do that when you're a kid.
You make an exception.
I don't know.
Or it's just a canonical blip if this is the only time it's going to come up.
Yeah, we'll have to keep our eye open for that. But yeah, I mean, in general, I just think she's really done a disservice as a character. I mean, we don't even get to see her. Like, obviously, she's already dead when Teal'c gets there, so I don't really want to see a dead body. But, you know, they obviously just didn't want to cast anybody for this. I mean, maybe they're trying to write off this character because the actress that they previously had was not going to be able to come back for whatever reason, and they didn't want to cast a third actress to yeah. play this same character since and she also, has been played twice. But
because they did have that whole Teal'c romantic arc thingy uh-huh. and were like, but you're married. I think they wanted to kind of open themselves up to being able to explore that a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily that, like, you know what I mean? Like, explore Teal'c as a romantic interest
yeah.
more. But you can't do that if he's married to somebody off-world yeah. and you don't want him bringing, like, family drama onto the base because that yeah. doesn't get the viewers.
Yeah. Yeah, I almost wonder if there was some backlash about him having his little affair with that priestess.
I mean, rightly so. But at the same time, you're right. Like, this is the second wife who has died.
Mm-hmm.
As, like, the second wife of an SG-1 member who has died.
Mm-hmm.
The second wife who was done very poorly
yep.
by the story.
Yep.
Who just kind of got forgotten on yep. another planet somewhere. I did make the joke, this is, like, no wonder Sam doesn't want to hook up with Jack if this is what happens to the wives on SG-1. Like,
yeah. Totally.
Like, no wonder. She's just going to die in some backwoods.
Mm-hmm.
After having exactly one baby.
I did have somebody on Twitter tell me one time that Teal'c wasn't cheating on his wife when he was having that affair because they had already had essentially a Jaffa type divorce when she thought he was dead. And she married somebody else. So this guy was saying that, like, oh, they're not actually married anymore. So he's allowed to have affairs. I'm like, but in this episode, they specifically refer to Drayok as his wife. They don't say ex-wife. They don't say former wife. They say his wife.
I think had a Jaffa divorce and, like, spiritually separated on the astral plane or whatever is, like, what a man tells himself before he cheats on his wife. Like... It's giving Ross and Rachel, we were on a break. Like, technically, but was it the right thing to do?
Yeah.
You know exactly what I mean? That's what this is.
Especially when he was talking about moving to Chulak to be with that woman.
Like, but they're, like, spiritually divorced, so he can go sleep with a priestess.
I mean, for all we know, Jafar men are allowed to have multiple wives, so maybe it would have been fine, technically. But we never established that. That's not really a thing that's talked about, so we don't actually know that. So, yeah. Well, now that Dragos is killed off, Teal'c is free to flirt with whoever he wants to flirt with. So.
Exactly.
Good for him, I guess. I don't know. I just feel bad for Drayok. Anywho, so then I guess we can talk about Ryak.
Listen. This kid rightly calling out his dad for not being
Absolutely.
There.
Oh my god.
Like, rightly calling Teal'c on all of his BS.
Yep.
I think he was the bit where he was, like, gonna shoot him, and Teal'c's like, fine, if you, like, believe this, then pull the trigger, because, like, this is what a warrior does. And then he just smacks him in the face. Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible. Yeah. Because pulling the trigger is just way too easy.
Right.
Because then he could be like, yes, my son did the right thing. But, like, bitch slapping him with a Jaffa stick.
Yeah. Well, he hits him multiple times.
That was great.
I loved it. Because, honestly, I feel like Teal'c deserved it a little bit. He has not been there for his son. And, like, I love Teal'c. I think he's a great character, a great member of the team. I love having him around. Not a great dad. And Ryak calls him out for that, rightfully so. Because it's like, Teal'c has not been around for 5 years. And obviously, he's not visiting every weekend. Otherwise, he would have known that his wife was sick. And when Teal'c first comes through and he sees the camp that they're living in, he comments on the poor conditions of the camp, and it's like, why don't y'all go move to the camp that the Tari set up? And it's like, wait, so did you not even know what her living conditions were? How long have you been gone? How long has it been since you've seen them?
I understand being stuck on base because you're grieving Daniel, but you also have a wife and child.
Yeah.
Like, you have split responsibilities, and I like that he's like off visiting them when it's convenient for story reasons, but also, like, he doesn't seem to go that often.
Yep.
He's like, he's not a great husband, not a great dad. Mm-mm. I don't know what it says that these are attributes the writers assigned to their only prominent Black actor.
Right.
Don't like it.
Yeah, the whole, like, absentee Black father thing. Yeah.
I was like, as I was taking notes for this, I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
Because prior to this, it kind of made sense. Like, him being in Apophis' service and kind of work literally keeping him physically separate. And then he defected and he's helping SG-1. So, like, it's dangerous for him to go back. Mm-hmm. So I understand him not being present. But then once he reconnected with them and he became a part of their life again, I think you and I kind of had this idea that he was going to see them. Mm-hmm. Off camera, like, anytime we weren't immediately with the team, that he was presumably making a lot of time for them. And now come to find out that's not been the case at all.
Yeah, because I think it was the beginning of season 2, he was able to rescue Drayok and Ryak and take them to the Land of Light. And so they were, like, refugees there for a little while. And then at some point, they moved to some Jaffa camp. But because we just find that out, like, 2 years later kind of thing. And so we don't actually know when. So it's like, how long were they in the Land of Light? Who knows? How long have they been living in this camp with poor conditions? I don't know. we're just not really given enough information. And so we're just left to assume that he's barely been around. And it's like, I mean, they were moved to safety at the beginning of season two. So, you know, it's been multiple seasons since then, multiple years, which means he should have had the ability to go see them at least a couple times a month.
And I think we had kind of presumed that was happening.
Yeah.
But it hasn't been. And then my other frustration with this is, like, Teal's got plenty of time to split time between SQ1 and his Free Jaffa movement. And I love the Free Jaffa movement. I love everything going on there because I think that's, like, long overdue. And it's something that kind of makes sense for where the show's developing.
Yeah.
But if you got time for that and you've got time for SG1, then what you shouldn't be doing is, like, reconnecting with your teenage son, for whom you are now the only living parent.
Yep.
And ending this spiritually fulfilling father-son journey with, yeah, he's going to go live with my old teacher and the two of them are going to, like, foster some sort of connection. I'm like,
yeah.
What? Like, you're passing the parenting buck again?
Even Braytak says something to about it because, you know, Rag is mad at Teal'c and Teal'c is like, I don't understand why he's mad at me. And, like, I don't understand why Rag thinks that I don't believe in him. And Braytak is like, well, you haven't told him that you're proud of him. You haven't told him that you believe in him. So why would he assume that? And I'm like, yes, Braytak, call him out.
Like, because it's, I get that Braytak's obviously the better father, but, like, you know what Braytak's not doing is passing his kids off to somebody else constantly.
Mm-hmm. So I feel like Braytak should have one of those shirts that, like, it's like, I'm not the stepdad, I'm the dad, that stepped up.
Honestly, though, like, truly, I love Teal'c so much, but what is this?
Yeah.
None of them are coming off great in this episode.
Mm-mm.
Except maybe Sam. But, like, Sam's kind of just there. Mm. I don't know. It was just a little, like, my issue with Sam is coming down to the writing. Because she's either giggling at Jonas, which, fine. Because that's just par for the course with how they write Sam.
Giggling at Jonas?
Wasn't she? I swear she was giggling too much at the beginning. And I'm like, stop giggling at him.
I don't remember that.
I took it very personally. But I get that she's been in tough situations before and, like, trying to figure things out. And, like, she's trying to figure out the big world-changing dilemma in this episode. I'm like, never have you seemed so in need of other people's help as you do right now.
Honestly, I kind of like that in that she seems more frazzled than usual, I think, because she's still in mourning.
Do you think that's what it is?
That's what I'm choosing to believe it is.
Because to me, it reads like they finally realize, like, she's, like, too competent a female character and they need to kind of bring her down a bit.
Hmm. Yeah, like, she's too perfect.
Not perfect, competent.
Yeah.
She's definitely not perfect. She's never been perfect. But
yeah,
she's too, like, competent.
In terms of, like, being able to come up with solutions that saved the day on her own.
Yeah. Like, she does that too easily.
Yeah. Now it's more of a team thing that was, you know, multiple people were involved.
Like, cause I know both she and Daniel were the resident doctors, but, like, the science-based solutions seem to come from her a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, this time she needed Jonas to remind her that the roof is retractable. Like, come on now. You have a PhD. You're better than this.
Well, I think that's one of those things that's something that's just knowledge in the back of your mind. It's not something that you think about on a regular basis. And so you just kind of forget about it. Whereas Jonas is brand new. So he's like, hey, what's up with the ceiling? You know, I thought that was understandable because it's like, normally you would never need to take the Stargate out of the mountain.
Right.
But I mean, in this episode, it's like she gets ideas from Jonas and she also gets ideas from McKay. So it's more like a sounding board type thing. They're all, like, helping each other figure this out. And which I think is good for Sam sometimes, because sometimes I think she gets so fixated on solving something by herself that she doesn't ask for help when she needs it. And so being forced to work with other people, I think, can be good for her.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Okay, I'll take that bit back. But I don't know, man.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm just personally choosing to believe that she's still depressed about Daniel, and so that's why she's kind of...
You're just choosing to have the more charitable read.
Yeah, I guess so.
Why not? Like, and another thing!
So, I guess we need to get into, like, the plot of these episodes.
Right! It's been 45 minutes, and we haven't really talked about the plot at all.
Yeah. So, Anubis has a device set up on another planet. It is a device originally built by the ancients, and he is using it. It's basically like a giant super collider, right? And he's channeling energy through the Stargate in order to build up power in the SGC's Stargate so that it will overload its power capacitors and explode. Yes. And I did do some looking up into this device. And of course, I didn't like write any of it down because why would I? But I think this is the only episode that specifically talks about this device. And so we don't know a whole lot about it. But it's speculated that this might have been built by the ancients for the purpose of charging up another Stargate. Like if there's a Stargate whose energy is low for some reason, like maybe there's something wrong with it, or maybe something wrong with the DHD, this might be a way of like pulling power to charge another Stargate. So that's kind of like a theory of what it might have been used for, because obviously the ancients weren't using it to like blow up. I mean, I guess they could have been using it to blow up their Stargates, but I don't know why they would need to. And so it's probably just that Anubis is, you know, taking this device and making his own thing out of it that's not really supposed to be used for. But it's really big, and it's like, it's really hard to tell by scale how enormous this is until like the second episode, and we get a little bit closer in, and like there, Ryak ends up flying over it with the glider, and then you kind of like really see the massive scale that this thing is on. But yeah, so power is building up in the Stargate, and they have a limited amount of time before all of their safety measures are just not going to cut it anymore, and the gate's going to explode. So they're trying to figure out how to stop the gate from exploding. And so this is like, you know, bickering back and forth with Sam and McKay. And McKay is really annoying because he keeps objectifying Sam, which is like same old, same old. But he does have a very honest moment in this episode that I really liked. After Sam gets hurt, he genuinely feels bad about it. Mm-hmm. And he apologizes, and he says that the reason he's acting that way is because he actually really admires her. He thinks she's incredibly intelligent, and he's intimidated and wishes that he could be as good of a scientist as she is, because he recognizes a lack in himself that she has. And I don't really like that she kind of brushes that off, because I thought that was like a really nice, earnest moment from him.
But I also wonder if he was similarly intimidated by like a man, whether he would also deal with it in the same way and sexually objectify them.
Probably not sexually objectify, but talk down to them, certainly. He talks down to other people all the time.
Yeah, but I'm like, I don't know if I think, I'm sorry, I was just intimidated by you is enough of a justification. But I do like that he's at least attempting some the openness.
Yeah. And he was, like, he said that he was trying to bond. You know, he was trying to make up for his mistake. And, yeah, I mean, she calls him creepy, which I agree.
Very creepy.
He is creepy, but he was like genuinely trying to like make a connection with her, which I thought was really nice. Then going back to the planet that Teal'c is on, one of their friends, Chakrel, I think, he comes and he's like, hey, I just found out that Anubis is attacking Earth, so we need to do something about it. And So then they have to try to figure out what planet the attack is happening from. And Braytac apparently just happens to know all of the planets that Anubis has bases on. And I'm like, is that
common knowledge?
Is that plausible? Like, for like any old Jaffa to just know all of the addresses for all of the Gwol, you know what I mean? Like,
Braytac's got hobbies. He's got hobbies.
And what's interesting about it is that he says, like, I hope I remember the combinations. And it's like, well, Anubis is kind of new on the scene. Like, obviously, he was around, like, 10,000 years ago. So I'm like, does that mean that Anubis is using the same planets that he used 10,000 years ago? And, like, no other world has taken them over since then? And they taught the Jaffa and Jaffa school what those addresses were, and that's how Braytac knows them?
I don't know.
I don't understand how he knows these planets. Especially because the planet that's currently being used to attack Earth has a massive potential weapon on it that I think would be, you know, memorable.
It's just, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't understand.
Anubis is a creature of habit.
But it's like, this is either new information that he's learned on recent missions, or these are planets that Anubis had access to 10,000 years ago and is just reusing them. So, I don't know. I feel like neither one makes sense, but whatever. So, yeah. Back on Earth, Sam comes up with this solution of maybe they can use the X-302 with the Nequadria hyperspace thing. And initially, they're just going to go travel to another planet, try to contact the Asgard. And the hyperspace window doesn't work because the Nequadria is too unstable. And, well, my comment does. I like their weird stripy flight suits. They're so weird looking, but they're kind of cute.
Very, very sci-fi.
Yeah. And so, yeah, so they got a 605-3 error, could not get a lock on the destination. And so then they have to come up with something else. And also in the midst of this, I don't know if you picked up on this already, but Jonas is constantly eating something. So that's going to be like
a couple times, but
that's going to be like a thing. He's always like eating or drinking something.
I was going to ask a question, but it's a spoiler.
Okay.
It's going to be like, is he around till the end of the show?
We'll see.
That's like a huge spoiler.
Well, you would know that if you were able to finish the episode too.
No, I know he sticks around because I checked like just now. Like not just now, but like as right before we started recording, I checked and he does stick around like past this episode.
We'll circle back to that. We'll circle back.
Yeah.
And so after they get back, this is the point where Anubis projects a hologram through the Stargate, and he has this like really melodramatic message of, you know, I'm gonna come get you, mwahaha, prepare to meet your doom. And Jack is like, oh, please. And so this is just mostly, I feel like this is just evidence that Anubis now has Asgard technology, which he got from Thor, which was what happened. Like, we saw that in the closer for season 5. So follow up to that, basically. And so, yeah, so Braytac has figured out the correct planet that they need to go to. So Ryak wants to join them on this mission, and Teal'c initially says no, but then he eventually lets him go because I think he realizes like Ryak really needs to like stretch his legs and like prove himself because he's of the age now where he needs to be trained properly on how to be a warrior. And so Teal'c gives them a chance. And I was just thinking that their friend Chakrell is really nice for like bringing them a cargo ship and telling them what's going on and like flying with them to this planet. I'm like, man, this guy's nice.
Stand-up guy.
Yeah. And there is a really nice moment between Ryak and Tilk when Ryak is like, let me go with you. I'm prepared to die. And Tilk is like, but I'm not prepared to lose you. I'm like, okay, see.
That was nice.
That was nice. This is how you need to be talking to your son, you know.
For all that we've been dragging Tilk, it's not that we ever get the sense that he doesn't love his son.
Mm-hmm.
He absolutely does love his son.
Yeah.
He's just not a very good dad.
I almost wonder.
He's not a very present dad.
I kind of wonder if it's one of those things where, in normal circumstances, the wife and mother would be the one raising the child to the point where they can start their Jaffa training. And so then they're given to like a Jaffa master who trains them. And maybe their dad can help on the side, but their dad isn't necessarily the one to do the training. So, I mean, maybe Tilk just
is going with their
custom.
That would be something I think they need to explain. Yeah. Not that I ever feel like I need over-explanation in shows. I generally don't.
Yeah.
But I think when you're dancing this close to the absentee black father trope,
yeah,
maybe devote a line or two to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just to make sure that we're all clear that it's not that.
Yeah. And then back at the SGC, McKay has a new plan. He wants to basically try to do a reverse effect on the Stargate and send through, it's an electromagnetic pulse, right, that they're doing? I might be misremembering that.
Oh, I don't remember.
Anyway.
Something or other.
And so it doesn't work, and unfortunately having the iris open for even a couple minutes meant that the energy built up significantly faster than it was before, and so now they have cut their time in half, and they only have 25 hours until the Stargate explodes. So, womp womp. And I mean, Sam is like really mad at him, blah blah blah, and like blaming him for it, but like, you know what, honestly, he tried, you know.
Okay, but I don't like him, so.
But I mean, he really did like give it his best, and it could have worked, you mean, you know. And like, I don't hate him for trying that.
Somebody no, had I just to don't like something. Him in general.
He'll grow on you eventually. I promise. And so, yeah, then back on Anubis's planet. So Tilk and Ryak and Braytak all go down to the planet, and unfortunately, Tilk and Braytak get kidnapped.
Shocked.
Yeah, and so then Ryak has to mount a rescue for them, and he somehow manages to steal a glider. We don't actually see him do it. I guess maybe that would have like taken too long, but he does steal a glider, and so he's able to kill the Jaffa that were holding Tilk and Braytak, and he's able to destroy the weapon. And it looks like it's a very, very brief shot, but it looks like this weapon is right on top of some kind of magma pool underground. Mm-hmm. Because when it explodes, it looks like there's magma shooting up into the air. And so, like, you know what? I think that actually makes sense, because there's a similar concept to this in an Atlantis episode where the gate and some amount of civilization is on the top of a volcano, and it's getting its power from the volcano underneath it.
Right.
So I think that's what's happening here, is this is probably on top of a volcano or some other kind of, you know, tectonic area that has magma underneath. So that's, I mean, I think that's pretty cool.
It is cool.
It didn't like linger on it for very long. I'm like, I feel like you could have lingered on that a few more seconds, but okay.
Just long enough to give you theories.
Yeah.
Oh, it was about the guys with the little Anubis thingy on their head.
The Anubis Jaffa?
Yeah.
What about him?
The leader who does all the... He was on Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, I saw that in your notes. I was like, oh.
And he was in this show.
Yeah, as another random Jaffa.
With no lines.
Yeah.
Like, look at you come back around.
With lines this time.
With lines. And you probably got your own dressing room. I'm so proud of you.
I don't know about going that far. He was only he only had lines for that one scene.
But he got paid more.
Yeah. Yeah, good for him.
That's why I'm proud.
Yeah.
Clearly made a good enough impression that they hired him again.
Yeah. Although this is the last one. He's only on the two episodes, so.
Well, because once he's had lines, he's
he has to leave.
Too noticeable now.
Well, I don't know, because there's other actors that they've used multiple times. There's one guy that they used twice in SG-1 and once in Atlantis who has lines in all of them. So
okay. So, well, no, because this was 2000. Yeah, this was 2002. He was going to he did Battlestar shortly after this.
So yeah, so he got busy.
Booked and busy. We love to see it.
Mm-hmm. And in this episode, we find out that the Stargate weighs 64,000 pounds. So that's fun.
I can lift that.
Of course you can. And so they come up with another plan to take the Stargate out of the mountain, and they mount the Stargate actually technically underneath. Is it underneath or on top? I think it was underneath, right? Yeah, underneath the X-302, and yes, they put that all on top of a 747. And they're going to fly that up, and they're going to try to get the X-302 with the Stargate out, I guess, past the atmosphere, so that if it explodes, it will have minimal damage.
Smart idea.
Yeah. And, oh, there was a Star Wars reference. Jack mentioned having it send him to a galaxy far, far away.
Because Jack's favorite movie
is Star Wars. Yes.
And this is for 2002, so we know he was at the multiplex all summer watching Attack of the Clones.
Absolutely. So. Wonder what he thinks about Padme and Anakin.
Probably hates it. Probably. Because he's a man of a certain age.
That's fair. I don't know, I could believe that, like,
actually, yeah, hang on.
But then, like, maybe he's, like, secretly rooting for them.
He, out loud, he's like, it didn't need that. And then, like, deep down, he kind of wants to, you know, try that on Sam.
Well, like, deep down, he likes forbidden romance.
Yeah, he's, like, all about it. It, like, he hates it because it hits too close to home.
Yeah.
Not because he thinks it's bad. He secretly likes it. It's just there's something about like the one woman you can't have. And he's like, why does Sam never wear leather dresses?
Right. Why can't I sit next to a fire with some alcohol while Sam wears leather?
Now here's the question. Did the whole team go watch it together? Like, did Sam and Jack take Teal'c to see Attack of the Clones?
Teal'c was going with or without anybody else.
Teal'c went more than once.
Oh, absolutely.
Teal'c was in line at midnight.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even think Sam and Jack went to the midnight showing. I think they definitely went like midweek.
Oh, yeah.
For Teal'c's like fourth
third time. Yes. Exactly.
But yeah. Teal'c was there at midnight. He had the robes.
Absolutely.
He was fighting with kids for popcorn buckets. Like, yep.
He got all the memorabilia stuff. Absolutely. I totally believe it. Because he'd seen the originals like 9 times.
That's true. I forgot what a big fan he was. Teal'c was 100% there at midnight. Absolutely. He's on the message boards. He's fighting with people. He is a prequels defender.
Oh, yeah. I believe it.
Yeah.
Maybe. Oh, I wonder if he'd be a Jar Jar defender. Because he's like the alien.
He's a Darth Jar Jar truther.
I don't know about that.
At this point, he's convinced. He's still convinced Jar Jar is like the big bad, and is like behind the Palpatine thing. And Revenge of the Sith will show him otherwise. But at this point in the story,
I don't know. But I do think that he'd be very interested in like critiquing the strategy used during the Clone Wars. So I bet he'd be watching the show too.
I was going to say when the Clone Wars comes out, like it just redefines his reality.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He's like commenting on their strategy in every episode.
I don't know if Teal'c survives or not, but like Teal'c, what are your sequel trilogy opinions? Teal'c, are you a Raylo? Yes, the answer is yes.
Yes. I want to give you like a tiny, tiny spoiler for something small that happens in the future. Okay. There's a random scene that the director or the writer has mentioned on Twitter that they only wrote this as a joke and they thought that the network was going to make them cut it out and they didn't. And so it stayed in the episode was that Teal'c attends a production of the Vagina Monologues. So like I'm like, you know what, he didn't treat his wife very well, but maybe because he's of
learning.
That he's learning and he's becoming a feminist, you know, so then when the sequels come out he does love Rey.
He does. Yeah, he loves Rey, he loves Rose, he loves Holdo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's totally true.
Yeah, I think he gets better. I think he learns from his mistakes with his wife and he gets better in his like respect and treatment of women and
because of Star Wars.
Yes.
Anyway, that went a little off the rails.
That's okay. That's what we're here for. So their whole plan kind of keeps changing. So Jack is just supposed to take the X-302, I guess, like, just out of Earth's orbit or something to release the Stargate and let it explode up in space. And that doesn't work because his rocket engines end up not having enough power. They don't get him high enough to... I don't know if he's supposed to enter orbit or go past orbit, but he doesn't reach orbit. Whichever one it's supposed to be. He does not reach orbit. And he starts falling back towards Earth. And they're not sure what they're going to do. And so then Jonas comes in with an idea again. And he's like, well, the hyperspace window didn't work because the Nequadria is unstable. But its instability is relative to the amount of it that you use. So if you only use a tiny bit, it might actually be okay. So they write a new program so that the hyperspace engine is only going to be fired for like a second and Jack has to eject from the X-302 before it actually jumps away, and it works. What I find interesting is that it detonated 3 million miles from Earth, but we can still see the explosion. I'm like, is that possible?
That's physically possible.
I think you would certainly be able to see it with a telescope if you're pointing it in the right direction.
Oh, sure, but not with the naked eye.
Yeah, that seems a little implausible to me. Like, if it had exploded in orbit, or like 100%. just past orbit, absolutely everybody on Earth would know about it. But 3 million miles away? I'm not sure I'd buy that.
I don't know about that.
And I would also really like to know if it was visible, both with the naked eye and with a telescope, whatever, what the excuse was that they told the general public what that explosion was, you know?
Training exercise.
In space?
Space Force training exercise.
Something going on at the International Space Station?
No, like, that would be a huge thing.
Yeah.
But like, so it could be like a telescope.
That far away, though? And that big of an explosion?
If they told the general public it was smaller but closer.
Right, yeah.
They would believe that.
Except that there are plenty of people who have access to all kinds of telescopes. And if they were able to observe it themselves, they would be able to tell how far away it was.
You gaslight them.
Well, I mean, yeah, essentially.
But that's far fewer people to gaslight.
There's a lot of telescopes, and if you can see it with the naked eye, you can see it with any telescope.
But how many people were looking in that direction at that moment?
I would say probably at least dozens, because there's telescopes that are like constantly running.
Just gaslight them.
And satellites that are constantly taking readings on things, you know. I mean,
well, you can redirect those,
but there's just no way that nobody would find out about it.
No way. But like, there's so much that happens at this show that logically should be something the general public is aware of. So
yeah. But anyway, the plan works, and Jack is able to use his chute in time. And there's like there's a moment where it's really tense because they don't know if he actually made it, but then they see a chute and it's all good. And apparently that little clip of the three parachutes touching down into the water is from an Apollo mission.
Oh.
So yeah.
That's nice.
Cool. Yeah. And so Sam's boyfriend was saved. maybe she can go take a nap now. Knowing that he's safe and they save the world again.
Mm-hmm.
So then it's like, it like rapidly moves into like the closing scenes. It feels very abrupt because they're very quickly like, Hammond is packing up his office and he's like, well, we don't have a gate and the Russians don't want to give us a gate, their gate. So we have to, you know, end our program. And I'm like, wow, you jumped to packing up your office so fast.
Hammond had one foot out the door.
He was
He's like, that gate's the only thing keeping me here.
Right? And he tries to steal a lamp. Well, he's going to steal a lamp.
What a king.
Yeah. But then I guess now we're getting into the part where, I guess the last thing you saw was Teal'c coming back.
Yes. Right?
Yeah. So Ryak stays with Braytak. He's going to start like more aggressively training to be a warrior. And so back to the status quo, I guess, with that.
Yay.
Yeah. And so now we get into the part that you didn't see because your DVD is dumb.
Yes.
So Hammond had to immediately unpack because the Russians ended up giving them their gate. They gave them a lot of money for it, plus plans for the X-302, and a promise that some Russians could start working at the SGC.
Just not on SG-1.
Well, so Hammond is like, part of the deal was that your new fourth member needs to be a Russian officer. And so Jack responds, well, I think you're just going to have to give them their own team instead, because I've already picked the new member and it's Jonas.
Now, the fact that he picked Jonas purely so he wouldn't have to work with a Russian
is problematic.
Very problematic, but at least Jonas is staying around.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Good for Jonas. Not a great look for Jack.
Yay, Jonas. Boo, xenophobia.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Now we come back, circle back around to that idea at the very beginning. You saw that the opening credits were different in these two episodes. It's because they were basically putting it on hold until they could start including Jonas in the opening credits. So next episode, it'll be opening credits with the actual people in there, and so we could see Jonas.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, no, the opening credits thus far haven't had them in it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, last season, the opening credits always had the people, like it would say Richard Dean Anderson, and it had several shots of him, and Amanda Tapping, it had several shots
of
him.
Did it? No, it didn't.
Yeah, it did.
Did it?
Yeah. And then these two episodes, it was just footage of the gate spinning.
Right, yes. Okay.
And so next week, it's going to be...
But it was different gate footage.
Yeah.
That's what caught my attention.
Yeah, I mean, it was new gate footage, but still, it didn't have any pictures or video of
The
people. There were no people in the opening.
But this is also the first new gate footage we've had. Like, as opening credits, it's been the same gate footage for the last five seasons. Now it's new.
Yeah.
I remember asking you once if that was going to change the gate
footage. You were talking about there's like an Egyptian statue that.
Yeah, that's gone.
That's gone, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll have
new footage back
again. Yay.
God, we've, like, come so far.
I know.
I know we're like only just over halfway, but it's sad to think there's more SG-1 behind us than there is ahead.
Right?
Like,
just, well, I guess there's the comfort of having Atlantis and Universe too.
I know, but like,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird. We're like on the downhill trajectory, I guess.
That's going to be quite the trajectory because we're cutting back and forth. Anyway.
Yeah. So how are you liking the opening for season 6?
It would have been great if I could have seen it all the way to the end. I think it'll be interesting to see how Jonas fits in the team now that he's like properly part of the team and not just like dancing on that periphery.
Yeah.
I do think that Michael Shanks's essence is missing. Because it was like a very specific team dynamic. And I think it had the advantage of, you know, when we pick up with them in season 1, we're kind of building off of the movie. So even the beginning of the show sort of had a bit of a pre-existing bond for some of them.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's very much like our established team plus the odd man out now having to integrate in. But I've seen that happen successfully on other shows.
Mm-hmm.
So it's only a matter of time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, growing pains, and they continue to mourn Daniel. But honestly, I really like Jonas. I think
Jonas is great. It's just like watching him fit into the team.
Yeah. Oh, you like Jack calling Sam an egghead?
Oh, I loved that bit. He's like, "You are an egghead," and then he like kind of walks it back, and he's like, "Try and make it compliment." I'm like, "You're an egghead, but you're my egghead."
Exactly.
Like, they just, they're so in love. It's ridiculous to deny it at this point. It's ridiculous for the writers to keep denying it at this point.
I know.
I don't even think they're denying it, but like, we just purchased equipment from the Russians and we're letting Russians work on a U.S. military base. Like, at this point, the disbelief is suspended. Let them bone.
I mean, I don't think Hammond cares.
Hammond is picking out China patterns for their wedding. Like, if Hammond is what we're worried about, like, worry no longer.
Yeah, for sure. It would only be an issue if somebody else was in charge. Like, if they had, you know, General Bauer had stayed or something, then it would be a problem. But
just, like, tell Hammond that if something goes wrong, Hammond has to discipline Sam. And that's the end of that.
Yeah, exactly. It's fine.
So.
But, I mean, Sam never does anything wrong, so she won't need to be disciplined.
Exactly. So.
So, in terms of things that are problematic, I mean, I think Jack and Teal'c both had poor behavior.
I agree, but I also think we talked about that for, like, 20 minutes.
Yeah, so we've covered that already. I think that's about it. Otherwise, I think these episodes hold up okay.
I agree.
So next week, we will be discussing SG-1 Season 6, Episodes 3 and 4, Descent and Frozen. Frozen is one of my favorite episodes, so I'm looking forward to that. And since Jonas is now going to officially be part of SG-1, I would like to have him as an option for our quotes of the week.
Okay.
Okay, are you ready for your next quote? Tell him I take back everything I was thinking when I was underwater.
Is it too easy for this to be Jonas because you just asked for him to be included? I don't know him well enough yet, so I don't feel confident guessing that it's Jonas. So let's just put that as my second choice. My first choice is probably Jack because it's kind of a bitchy thing to say. I think he's talking... Actually, yeah, I think Jonas is involved. I think he's talking... to Jonas. He's talking to one of the other members of the team, maybe not Jonas. He's talking to one of the other members who is interpreting his sentiment to the person of the week.
Okay.
And now whatever this person of the week has said to Jack has caused a change of heart, and this is...
So the person of the week, not Jonas?
No, Jack is talking to a member of the team.
Okay.
Asking them to relay this message to person of the week.
Okay. We'll find out next week if you're right. That's it for today. If you enjoyed listening to our podcast, we would love for you to rate us 5 stars wherever you can. you want to talk to us about Stargate, you can find us on our podcast Twitter and Tumblr page at Wormhole Waffles. You can find me on Twitter and Tumblr at Chelsea Fairless. Arzu, how about you?
You can find me on Twitter at Arzu Amin. I'm on Blue Sky at arzuamin.bluesky.social. I'm at arzud2 everywhere else. So Threads, Instagram, Tumblr. As a network, we are on Twitter at geeky_waffle. We are the Geeky Waffle on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Tumblr. We're at thegeekywaffle.com. We're the Geeky Waffle on YouTube. And we are on Patreon, patreon.com/thegeekywaffle.
Thanks for joining us today. And we'll see you on the other side of the event horizon.